As I say each week, the mission of the advocates to bring to the public different views on current public policy issues. Public policy, therefore, is what we as a nation legally and traditionally follow. To that end, many of my shows are devoted to that purpose. Jeff Madrick is the director of the Rediscovering Government Initiative at the Roosevelt Institute and economics columnist for Harper's Magazine. He's also the editor of Challenge Magazine and a regular contributor to New York Review of Books, as well as the former economics columnist for the New York Times. He's a visiting professor of humanities at Cooper Union, senior fellow at the Schwartz Center for Economic Policy Analysis at the New School. His former book, The Case for Big Government, was named one of the 2009 Penn Galbraith Nonfiction Award finalists. His most recent book is The Age of Greed, The Triumph of Finance, and The Declining of America, 1970 to Present. And he was a guest right here discussing this very book 15 months ago. Is he on the line now? Very good. He's also Thank you, Jeff. He's also a fellow of the World Policy Institute and the Century Foundation, member of the board of the Center for Economic Policy Research, and he's been a contributor to almost every important business magazine there is. He was educated at NYU and Harvard University and was a Shorenstein Fellow at Harvard. He's married and lives in the city of New York. You know, in the National Journal article, they stated Mitt Romney's bashing of the 47% of people who pay no federal income taxes may have sounded like a shocking admission to liberals, but it's a talking point that conservatives, not just Romney, have grown fond of in the last year as a way to talk about the size of the federal government. When Mitt Romney was secretly recorded addressing a fundraiser in Boca Raton, Florida, and the 47% figure finally came to the surface, a political firestorm ensued. Jeff Madrick, what is the nexus of this figure, and what does it mean in real numbers?
Well, I think you're right. People should know this has been a talking point for the right wing since 2010, when the Tax Policy Center, a nonpartisan group, did the arithmetic. What it means is, indeed, at any one point in time, roughly 46 or 47% of Americans don't pay federal income tax. There are two reasons they don't pay it. One is they simply don't make enough money. The other is two major tax credit programs, the Earned Income Tax Credit and the Child Tax Credit. These allow you to reduce your taxes as when you are working. They are only available to working people with children, and they were highly regarded by Republicans. Right. Ronald Reagan expanded the earned interest tax, EITC, tax credit, and George W. Bush expanded the child tax credit. The principle was always, sometimes one I don't like that much myself, but it's the principle was highly recommended by the extreme conservative economist Milton Friedman. That's the irony. Right. That's one of the many ironies here.
You know,
that half of these people do pay federal taxes.
Right.
They pay payroll taxes for Social Security and Medicare, and those payroll taxes are quite high for working class people of low income.
Right.
In fact, under Ronald Reagan, those payroll taxes were raised, and they are what we call regressive. That is, low-income people and moderate-income people pay the same rate, the same percentage rate on their income. High-income people pay less because there's no tax, payroll tax, above $110,000 of income annually.
Right.
So not only is it a fiction, it's a vulgar fiction and an ugly fiction.
You know, according to Peter Wehner, a longtime Republican consultant and a member of the Romney team, he stated it's more directed at the tax code than the people receiving benefits. It's an inequality in their minds, a response to Occupy Wall Street. How many people actually do not pay any taxes? And aren't some of these people quite wealthy who don't pay federal income tax?
Well, sure. Lots of people. The wealthy have access to tax shelters and tax credits that you and I assume we are both closer to the middle than the high end of the income distribution. But they have access to tax credits and tax shelters and ways of hiding their income, frankly. That often reduces their tax to zero. Pretty obnoxious. The people who pay no federal taxes at all, that is no income tax and no payroll tax, aside occasionally from the very wealthy, are students, the poor elderly, and very poor people in general. Those are the people who don't pay taxes in America. Just let me emphasize this point. We enabled the poor to do somewhat better by giving them tax credits if they worked. The earned income tax credit and the child tax credit, they only get them if they work. And these guys, Mitt Romney is saying these are the dependents, and you know, I don't want it. They think they're entitled to everything. They feel they are victims. That's what he said on this tape. And I can't worry about them.
Right. You know, it's interesting also as a corollary to that, over 162,000 Americans make over $163,000 and they didn't pay any FID. Also, 3,000 people in the United States earn more than $2 million and they don't pay any taxes at all, including payroll. Now, realistically speaking, aside from Americans who receive all sorts of benefits and are not working, it is true that every employed American does pay payroll tax. Let's go back over, Jeff. What are payroll taxes? Where do they go? And do the working poor pay their fair share? I know you discussed this, but let's elaborate more so people understand this.
Oh, yeah, the working poor, to take your last question first, definitely pay their fair share. Social Security was started by FDR in the 1930s, as most of us know. It's one of the great social programs America ever established. But we were slow to establish public retirement programs. Europe did it. Many countries in Europe did it far earlier than we. And the Prussian nation, the forerunners to Germany, did it very early on, back in, I think it was the 1870s, in fact.
Under Bismarck, no doubt.
Yeah. And but here's what happened. One way of financing a retirement program is just to take it out of general tax revenue, right? Progressive taxes. But Roosevelt realized this just wasn't progressive income taxes, but Roosevelt realized this wasn't going to fly. So he made it a percentage of your wages. He established a tax as a percentage of your wages so that Americans would support the idea that if you worked, yep, you would pay into this fund, and only if you worked would you get Social Security or some adequate level of Social Security when you retired.
Jeff,
taxes kept increasing, of course.
Well, Jeff, let me interrupt you a second. We got to go to commercial break. We're going to come right back to this.
Okay.
My guest is journalist Jeff Madrick, author of The Age of Greed. Our discussion is who owns America and who really are the 47%. You're listening to The Advocates on WVOX Radio, 1460 AM. We've got a short financial news break.
With business news at 20 minutes past the hour, every hour, here's the latest update from the Fox Business Network on WVOX Worldwide.
From the Fox Business Network, it's a tough day for the markets as investors await the latest news from the Federal Reserve on the U.S. economy due out later today. At 12 p.m. Eastern, the Dow is down by 77 points, red arrows across the board. FedEx shares moving in the other direction, they're up. After providing details of its cost-cutting plan, the package delivery company is planning some deep cuts at its underperforming Express Air division. FedEx is looking to improve profits by $1.7 billion by the year 2016. And Toyota recalling more than 7 million vehicles worldwide to fix a faulty window switch. The automaker says grease was not applied evenly during production, causing friction and a potential fire hazard. The recall affects more than a dozen models produced from 2005 through 2010, including the Camry, Corolla, RAV4, Yaris, and Matrix. No crashes and no injuries have been reported, but this is the latest massive quality issue for the Japanese automaker. With the Fox Business Report, I'm Lauren Simonetti.
I am the new way to work, and I am not alone. More companies, from the startups to the large multi-location companies, are realizing that office solutions from Regis are tailor-made for their needs, whatever those needs may be. With Regis, they get to invest in their business instead of lobby art and phone systems. They get the local presence they need without the long-term lease. I am the new way to work, and I'd like you to join me. Start now and get 2 months free at Regis.com/radio or call 1-800-OFFICES. That's 1-800-OFFICES.
1460 WVOX.
There's always something happening with Richard Garfunkel on 1460 WVOX and WVOX.com.
Kids, you are listening to WVOX Radio, 1460 AM, live streaming at WVOX.com with my guest, journalist Jeff Madrick, author of The Age of Greed. We're talking about who owns America and who really are the 47%. Before we get back to Jeff's discussion of payroll taxes, you know, this conversation was stimulated by your remarks when you wrote about Mitt Romney's off-the-cuff remark that nearly half the Americans are dependent on government and believe that they are victims who are entitled to health care, to food, to housing, to you name it, were widely publicized. This is an old saw for a certain kind of anti-government conservative, you wrote. I have given talks deep in conservative territory where courteous members of the audience would come up to me afterwards and say they agree. We should pay taxes for infrastructure, but not for giveaways to those people. So before we get into who those people are, Jeff, what about this payroll tax and what's a bit of its history?
Well, the payroll tax, it began with FDR. As I say, it was designed to make Social Security be fair, or at least seem fair to Americans. You only got it if you worked, but if you worked, you had to pay into the Social Security fund. As benefits became more generous and as more people were covered, because not everybody was covered under FDR, the taxes increased. Benefits were increased under Richard Nixon, by the way. They were pegged to inflation. They've been increased several times as a proportion of income over these years. But they are what we would call regressive taxes. They are a specific rate. You pay at a specific rate. Oddly enough, it's skipping me.
It's
right
about
now.
6% for Social Security, 1.45% for Medicare. Paid by both employer,
Medicare, as you're saying, which was introduced in the mid-60s under Lyndon Johnson, another great, one of our three or four greatest social programs. So we pay these substantial taxes, but effective taxes. That's been the general history of it. It could have gone another way. As I said earlier, we could have paid it out of progressive income tax.
Right. And you know, Jeff,
for political reasons.
And you know, Jeff, everybody talks about the deficit. But the long-term deficit is in Medicare and Social Security, and that's paid directly by the recipients. In other words, their 6% goes right to the bottom line, where their zero tax on FIT goes to a much smaller discretionary budget, which is approximately 66% deficit, deficit, armed forces, the VA, and Homeland Security. So the wiggle room in the discretionary budget isn't too great, and all the talk about the deficits seem to be being addressed by the recipients. That's which is sort of interesting. Getting back to these.
Well, let me just disagree with you very slightly. Almost all the future deficit is about Medicare.
Yes, right. Medicaid, as part of the entitlement.
Not socials. Right. People should be very clear because the right, including the Pete Peterson allies, lump Social Security and Medicare together.
Right.
And people consider themselves common sense centrists lump Social Security and Medicare.
And of course, Obamacare, as even the president attributes right. it, was directed to that deficit that was emerging in Medicare. And
A lot of Obamacare is about trying to control health care costs.
Right. No question.
Future. Now, not enough of it, but at least some of it. The other plans are the right-wing plans or the Republican plans, which I openly call right-wing, are about reducing Medicare by reducing health care coverage for the elderly. I mean, it's triage. We will reduce your coverage. People should be very clear about that.
Now,
they're not reforming Medicare. Right. They are simply cutting back health care coverage for you.
Now, when Mitt Romney mentioned all these people that were taking advantage, they wanted free food, free work, free health care, are these people, was it right to say that these people were undeserving dependencies, leeches, and tax dodgers? I mean, who were they?
Pretty outrageous.
Now, the taxes were written by bipartisan Congresses and presidents, so therefore, really, they're not dodging taxes, would you say?
Well, a very high proportion of the so-called red states, the strong states that vote strongly Republican and are conservative, a very high percentage of those people are among the 47% Romney was criticizing. Now, it's very upsetting because we have to remember Romney was, the thing we have to know about Romney is how cynical a man he is.
Right.
And cynicism in business often makes sense in this way. You do what you have to get the job done. That may often mean, fudging the numbers, as Jack Welch used to do now, famously.
Yeah, well,
criticizing the Labor Department.
Right.
He used to do at General Electric. It's widely assumed, in any case, or widely alleged.
Yeah.
But here was Romney talking to a bunch of wealthy people.
Oh, yeah.
Knocking the lower half.
Who
these
can't?
Wealthy
who
people.
Really can't defend themselves? You know, there are many demands.
These people work. These people who pay no taxes, they are in construction. They're in manufacturing. They're in healthcare. They're the ones who work in restaurants, and they're the ones who are in the maintenance departments of your buildings. It's just an unbelievable. And their wages. I hope we get to talk about this, Richard.
Yeah, we will.
Because the wages of the lower half of America, from the median, the 50th percentile on down, they hardly rose since the 1970s.
You know, just before we go to the next break, there were many demands that Mitt Romney, a member of the 1%, reveal his taxes. He even demanded that his vice presidential running mate, Paul Ryan, be vetted by revealing his last 10 years of taxes, but he stonewalled his own demand. Is it possible that Mitt Romney did not pay any federal taxes in the years before 2010, as claimed by Harry Reid, the majority leader of the Senate? Is that possible?
I don't know any more about this than you. I think it is possible, but I think his real concern is drawing attention to the specific tax shelters he took to get his rate down to 12 or 13%, and just how aggressive he was. You know, you don't have to take, when you're a rich person, you don't have to take every tax shelter legally available to you or semi-legally available to you and then wait for the IRS to catch you. But he seems to have done something like that. That's what I mean about his cynicism. Here is a man who wants to be president and tried to minimize, had no respect for government, tried to minimize what he paid to the government.
Yeah,
this is a fundamental lack of respect for government.
No question about it. You know, it's of course interesting that people use that kind of tactic in many areas of our culture. It's called victimization, making somebody else the victim. You know, my guest is journalist Jeff Madrick, author of The Age of Greed. I have it right in front of me. Our discussion today is about who owns America, who really are the 47%. He was on my show last August. It's a wonderful book. I recommend it to everybody in our listening audience. You're listening to The Advocates on WVOX Radio. We're going to go to a short commercial break, and we'll be back in a few short moments.
With world and national news three times an hour. Here's the latest update from Fox News Radio on WVOX Worldwide.
Fox News Radio. I'm Chris Foster. A House hearing started on the attack on the consulate in Benghazi, Libya, where four Americans died.
It was caused by a terrorist attack that was reasonably predictable to eventually happen somewhere in the world, especially on September 11th.
California Republican Daryl Issa chairs the House Oversight and Government Reform Committee. The former head of a military team at the consulate says it never had enough security. One member of a Russian punk band set free on appeal, with two others now headed to a penal colony.
Yekaterina Samatsevich walking free from a Russian court after a judge quashed her two-year prison term. The band were all convicted of hooliganism motivated by religious hatred.
Fox News Radio Simon Owen, the band did a song in a cathedral criticizing Russian President Vladimir Putin. Fox News. We report, you decide.
1 100-gallon sunblock dispenser. 1 iguana complete with rhinestone leash. Hi, I'm Barry, and I'm practically giving away all these items and more. I bought them when I was going to move to Las Vegas. Then I found out about Empire City Casino right here in New York. 5,300 slots, craps, roulette, and baccarat, 20 minutes from Manhattan. So if you're in the market for a snakeskin cowboy hat with built-in fan, check out my Facebook page under Baccarat Barry. Meantime, I'll be at Empire City Casino. Okay, happy bidding.
Now in Westchester, for corporate travel, executive transportation, and custom limousine service, the leader, clearly, is Excel. After two decades in the county, Rich Guberti's Excel Transportation Service does just that. Specializing in sedans, limos, and 14-passenger vans, Excel is the new class of the fleet and the Westchester leader in terms of cars, service, resources, and the quality of their Excel drivers. Most of the Golden Apple's blue-chip companies have, in fact, at recent years, switched to Excel for local transportation and city-to-city service to Washington, Albany, Baltimore, Hartford, Boston, and Philadelphia at rates even less than rail or air. And you can use them too for a trip into town, the airport, or any special occasion. Call President Rich Guberti at Excel Headquarters, EXCEL Transportation, 576-9797, 914-576-9797. These days in Westchester, the new car service leader, because Excel excels. 576-9797.
There's a brand new look at the Radisson Hotel right here in New Rochelle at 1 Radisson Plaza. The Radisson is the only full-service hotel in downtown New Rochelle, and their newly renovated look is something that has caught the attention of all who visit and stay there. The brand new 130 newly renovated guest rooms and state-of-the-art bathrooms are simply wonderful. The elegant lobby is designed with truly well-thought-out design features and is absolutely stunning. There are 6,500 square feet of beautiful newly appointed catering facilities, a state-of-the-art business center, an outdoor pool, and much, much more. And a new and amazing restaurant, the Noma Social, featuring Mediterranean cuisine. There's a big difference between eating and dining, and the Noma Social is dining in style. The Radisson, located off I-95 at exit 16 and two blocks from the Metro North train station. For more information or reservations, call 914-576-3700.
Hi, I'm Rob Baker.
And I'm Ed Iannacone, and we are the Financial Forum.
We are the Baker Iannacone Financial Group, Senior Vice Presidents of Investments with Wells Fargo Advisors.
Every morning, Monday through Friday, from 10 to 10:30, join us for a half hour of financial common sense.
You know, during the show, we'll recap what happened yesterday in the markets, we'll look at what might be affecting the markets today,
and we always have a topic of the day that'll educate and help you continually sharpen your financial skills.
So grab your coffee
or your tea,
kick up your feet, and enjoy some scintillating conversation.
The Financial Forum, every morning, Monday through Friday, from 10 to 10:30.
Here on 1460 WVOX and WVOX.com.
Steve Pelletieri's Eye on Weather is brought to you on WVOX Worldwide by Entergy and the Indian Point Energy Center, right for New York.
Forecast Westchester County in the vicinity for this afternoon. Cloudy skies, periods of light rain and drizzle through the afternoon. Highs and ranges in the middle 60s. Partly cloudy to mostly clear this evening. Overnight lows falling back into the middle 40s. Mostly sunny, upper 50s to around 60 on Thursday. Friday's weather, we'll see partial sun. Chance of a shower through the afternoon. Highs into the middle 60s. Mostly sunny, upper 50s to around 60 on Saturday. Generally cloudy weather, upper 60s for Sunday. A chance of rain Monday. Steve Pelletieri, Jr. pointing for WVOX Worldwide and WVIP HD.
Recently, some people have had questions about the plants that generate our electricity here in New York. You have a right to know the facts about one of the most important providers of power to our area. Did you know that Indian Point provides about a quarter of the electricity for New York City and Westchester, with virtually no emissions and at lower cost? Indian Point's operations are constantly reviewed to ensure safety by the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. It's among the most thoroughly reviewed nuclear energy facilities in the country. And that there are multiple federal inspectors on site, and the law guarantees them access to any document, any employee, and any portion of the facility. That's accountability, every day, all the time. I'm Teresa Motko, and I'm an engineer here at Indian Point, and my family and I live in the area. All of us have a right to know why Indian Point is right for New York. Visit rightfornewyork.com for answers.
Whether you're working...
I like listening to music when I work.
...or working out...
When I'm in the gym.
We're working for you. VOX.
WVOX.
Now, back to The Advocates with Richard Garfunkel on 1460 WVOX and WVOX.com. Join in the conversation at 914-636-0110. Once again, here's Richard Garfunkel.
Welcome back to The Advocates. You're listening to WVOX Radio, 1460 AM, live streaming at WVOX.com. My guest is journalist Jeff Madrick, author of The Age of Greed, which I have right in front of me, The Triumph of Finance and the Decline of America, 1970 to the present. You know, you wrote, it is the dependency issue that requires real information. Income for the lower half of American earners has been growing very slowly since the late 1970s, more or less when Ronald Reagan took office. Compared to economies overseas, the wage performance has been just plain bad. Jeff, it has been chronicled in the Wall Street Journal that the period from 1970 through 2000, real wages went up less than 10%, but corporate CEOs received a tax cut of 70% and their wages went up 3,500%. Who's responsible for the war on the middle class and this idea of income and wealth redistribution?
Say that again. Who is on the I didn't.
Who's responsible for the war on middle class and income redistribution?
Well, I think my take on this is quite straightforward. It began in the 1970s. There was always a groundswell, support for. There was always anger at redistribution policies and the New Deal in America in the 1950s and 1960s. But it was just overwhelmed by what was then a somewhat liberal country that believed in social programs and reasonable and fair redistribution of income through policies like adequate unemployment insurance, a reasonable minimum wage, and social programs like Social Security and so forth. And then we got, thankfully, into Medicare and Medicaid. But there was always maybe ideologically based, but often based on their own private interests. A large number of Americans who hated the New Deal, hated redistribution of income, and were worried that it would take money out of their own pockets. Mm. These began to grow bolder and find more adherence in the 1970s when the economy really turned bad, high inflation, high unemployment at the same time. And government became the scapegoat for all problems, reduced wages in particular, and lack of job opportunities. This was wrong, but it's government that redistributes income and creates social justice in America. Capitalism itself will often create powerful new companies, new jobs, and so forth. It does not by any means do that on its own. It needs government both for the education, for roads, for research, for laws, for trust in what each of us does, for product regulation. We have to regulate the products these businesses sell or people will eventually stop buying them. But the redistribution effort began aggressively in the 1970s and basically succeeded under President Reagan and his followers. We raised regressive payroll taxes, as we've been discussing, Richard. We lowered progressive income taxes in the 1980s. We stopped implementing regulations. Labor laws were basically left fallow. So many people in America now work below the minimum wage.
Right. You know,
many more hours than is allowed.
Right. You know,
and
just,
then, of course, financial deregulation.
Right. You know, just as a corollary to that, Jeff, Reagan lowered taxes 70% to the top bracket of 28%, the lowest on top wage earners since the income tax was brought in, I think, including a couple of years in the Harding administration. And interestingly enough, between the 4 years of Reagan and Bush 41, pardon me, the debt quadrupled in peacetime. Very interesting.
The taxes were raised, were cut far too sharply under Ronald Reagan. He had to raise them, of course, in the next couple of years. He went so far.
Well,
the economy came back after the Reagan very deep Reagan recession and Volcker recession, which caused very high unemployment and cut GDP substantially. GDP grew back from that level, but still did not grow enough to reduce the debt. The debt kept rising, or to really reduce the deficit. I think it was about 3% of GDP in Reagan's final year in office.
Well,
some people who think he solved the debt problem, it's amazing how our imaginations rewrite history.
Well, just remember this. 2 years into the Reagan administration, unemployment went to 10.5% and stayed there for at least 18 months. And only at the end of his 4 years, where he took over unemployment from Carter at 7.6%, a lot attributed to the oil embargo, did unemployment go down to 7.3%. And it's also interesting in thinking about Jimmy Carter, who is reviled today, that job growth in Jimmy Carter's 4 years was 10 million, equal to the total job growth in Bush 41, 43, and Eisenhower. More jobs in the Carter 4 years than in the Bush and Eisenhower 16 years. Very interesting. The decline in the middle class, which was exacerbated by the market crash of 2008, has also been hurt by the war against unions and other factors. Jeff, how has globalization and the refusal of Congress to raise the minimum wage hurt American workers?
Well, I think globalization is hurting American workers. Now, the question you have to ask yourself about this is a difficult moral one. Should we be trying to punish very low-wage countries or allow them to raise their own wages? I think there has to be a middle ground. What we have to demand of very low-wage countries is fairness to their own workers. That is to say, they do repress wages in these countries, I think. That's starting to end. In order to sell their exports, they don't have safety regulations. They don't have retirement regulations. They often have very bad health care programs. We have to demand that they start doing what we did in the beginning to do with the progressive period in the low 1800s. But globalization is affecting our wages, especially in the middle. But there are ways to deal with this. One would be to raise the minimum wage, which is quite low when you take inflation into account. Compared to what it was in the 1950s.
Jeff, I've got to go to a break. We're going to get back to this. My guest is journalist Jeff Madrick, author of The Age of Greed, talking about who owns America. You're listening to The Advocates on WVOX Radio, 1460 AM live streaming. We're going to go to a short commercial break, and we'll be back with this conversation in a moment.
With world and national news 3 times an hour, here's the latest update from Fox News Radio on WVOX Worldwide.
Fox News Radio. I'm Chris Foster. A House hearing started on the attack on the consulate in Benghazi, Libya, where 4 Americans died.
It was caused by a terrorist attack that was reasonably predictable to eventually happen somewhere in the world, especially on September 11th.
California Republican Daryl Issa chairs the House Oversight and Government Reform Committee. The former head of a military team at the consulate says it never had enough security. One member of a Russian punk band set free on appeal. Two others headed to a penal colony.
Yekaterina Samatsevich walking free from a Russian court after a judge quashed her two-year prison term. The band were all convicted of hooliganism motivated by religious hatred.
Fox News Radio's Simon Owen, the band did a song in a cathedral criticizing Russian President Vladimir Putin. Fox News, we report, you decide.
Bill Harrington of the Blakely Platt Law Firm in White Plains has asked that we make note of the annual Red Mass, sponsored by the Catholic Lawyers Guild. This year's Red Mass will be celebrated by Father Thomas Collins, the president of Stepanak, at the St. John the Evangelist Church in White Plains. The Mass, which was founded locally by the late B.J. Harrington, is held each year for local judges, lawyers, those in law enforcement, and their families, asking God to guide the legal profession toward the administration of justice. The custom actually dates back to Europe in the 13th century. St. John the Evangelist is at 148 Hamilton Avenue in downtown White Plains. The Catholic Lawyer Guild's Red Mass is Wednesday, October 10th at 6 p.m.
Wherever you listen.
In the shower.
I listen to it all the time. I listen at work, in my car, when I get up.
Thanks for keeping it here. WVOX Worldwide.
The voice of Westchester. WVOX.
Now, back to The Advocates with Richard Garfunkel on 1460 WVOX and WVOX.com. Join in the conversation at 914-636-0110. Once again, here's Richard Garfunkel.
Welcome back to The Advocates. You're listening to WVOX Radio, 1460 AM, live streaming at WVOX.com with my guest, journalist Jeff Madrick, author of the book In Front of Me, The Age of Greed. We're talking about who owns America, where our progress is centered. You know, to digress a moment, we went from a poverty rate in the Eisenhower years of 30% to 11% in the war on poverty era to a sharp rebound in poverty that has grown steadily since Ronald Reagan, with an abatement only in the 1990s. Last year, you wrote The Age of Greed, which detailed the long, ugly history of the rise and fall of the mega banks and their ascendancy in the period after the repeal of the New Deal's Glass-Steagall, and which was replaced with Graham Leach Bliley. Jeff, what was Glass-Steagall all about, and what happened when it was changed?
Well, as Glass-Steagall was part of the New Deal response to the financial excesses is a mild word, of the 1920s, which helped lead us to the Great Depression. There were serious conflicts of interest between what we call commercial banks, the banks that take our savings and lend it to business, and brokerage firms and investment banks that invest in stocks and try to raise money for companies through stocks and bonds. The conflicts of interest were quite clear. If you're lending money to a company and also trying to raise money for it from your friends and stocks, you'll often lie about the quality of that company or even lend it more money than is prudent to lend it just to make more money on the other side of that transaction, on selling stocks to people. So that these conflicts were highly abused in those periods, and Glass-Steagall basically separated the commercial banks from the investment banks, raise money, put it into debt, lend it to companies safely, versus take more risk, try to start new companies, raise equity for companies, and so forth. It had a long, the country worked very well under this separation in the 1950s and 1960s and into the 1970s. But as finance became more dominant and more complex, and the Federal Reserve allowed investment banks and commercial banks to soften the boundary lines, and the conflicts began way back then. What Glass-Steagall was by and large ended before Bill Clinton signed the very formal elimination of the law.
It had been weakened by Greenspan and the Fed, as you chronicle in your book.
Right. time and again it was weakened, so commercial banks like Bankers Trust or Chase could basically do what brokerage firms did, and brokerage firms in turn could buy banks or buy into banks and so forth and find new sources of money. And it culminated in Citigroup, the combination of big brokerage and insurance companies under Sandy Weill, and Citicorp, the child of Walter Wriston, the aggressive banker of the 1960s and 1970s. But it led to all kinds of conflicts of interest. And indeed, it did contribute. People keep arguing, like Larry Summers, that it didn't contribute to the financial crisis. It did in this way. Not only were conflicts of interest rife, and they still are to a remarkable degree. I mean, you had analysts preaching how good these companies were, while companies like Chase and Citigroup and so forth were lending their all kinds of money under clever schemes and so forth. But the real problem was it allowed for the creation of huge diversified companies, and these so-called smart managers, executives, believed now that we've diversified, we are a much less risky empire, and we can therefore take far more risk. That is to say, let's borrow a lot of money and invest in risky securities like complex collateralized debt obligations,
right. So derivatives, etc.
Securities.
You know,
right.
it seems like it became the savings and loan scandal on steroids.
Well, I think that that's true, yeah.
You know, to reiterate, in your book, The Age of Greed, you describe the economic history from 1970 until the Bush 43 economic meltdown of 2007 to 2008 and the stock market crash resulting in what we now know as the Great Recession. Where do we go from here with a still sluggish economy, a divided government, large energy-related problems, trade deficits, federal budgetary shortfalls, high unemployment, large baby boom generation starting to retire? How's it? What does either Obama or Mitt Romney have to deal with this?
Well, they're going to do stuff neither is going to do, including Obama, who I'm writing in support of for this election, in part because the alternative would be so terrible. We have become so transfixed by the need to get the deficit down. And by the way, and as I think you agree, we don't have to get the deficit down any time in the near future. But we're so transfixed that we're cutting social programs, we're limiting our ability to invest in infrastructure and education and so forth, which we should be doing very aggressively now. So that in 2013, not only will we probably not get any stimulus from the federal government to keep this expansion going, we'll probably get the opposite. We'll probably get a contraction in government spending next year, which increases the possibility of a recession.
Yeah.
In fact, it almost makes a recession likely. Now, a weakening American economy in a time when Europe is really fouling up its own economies and in recession right now as we speak, basically, and it's likely to get worse because of these anti-deficit, forgive the word, but lunatic austerity programs they are imposing on themselves. That will also withdraw demand from the American economy and make a recession worse. So we may face a recession in 2013. I'd put the odds at 50-50. What that means is we're just not going to be investing in our economy the way we have to build the foundation of this economy through advanced infrastructure, local mass transit, fast trains, and through the equalization of our educational system, K through 12. We'll never develop fully a pre-K, a nationwide pre-K system of quality and affordability, which we now know is vital, especially in a nation that has such unequal income. So many poor families where kids don't get the educational nutrition they need, not to mention the caloric nutrition they need. So we really face this is really a critical juncture. Now, I think Obama has a sympathy for this, but he also seems to have some sympathy for this austerity stuff. this balancing the budget. I mean, he appointed this commission, which has gotten so much more credit than it deserves, the Simpson-Bowles Commission. And Democrats are now starting to glom on and say, yeah, well, we can cut taxes by and then close loopholes. It's nonsense. And thankfully, Senator Schumer from my own state in New York and yours said today this is a happy talk, or said yesterday it's happy talk. If we cut taxes for even the wealthy, for everybody, we're not going to raise revenue by closing loopholes like mortgage deductions and so forth.
That'll only affect the middle class anyhow. That'll only affect the middle class. A person making $1 million, even if he was paying, not able to deduct his mortgage or state income tax, wouldn't change his rate in the least. So that,
well, it's not only that. It wouldn't raise that much money.
Right.
I mean, you have to get at the middle class to raise the money.
Right. It would punish them.
We shouldn't be cutting taxes, but we should be keeping our social programs. I'm going to get a little exercised by this. The idea that we're going to cut Social Security beyond what it's already been cut gets me pretty aggravated. Perhaps we can cut it minimally, but very minimally. It's not enough as it is. The truth is we've got to expand Social Security.
Do you believe...
retirement programs are crazy, but let me just go...
One quick question.
The one thing we need down the road, Richard, if we get out of this economic morass, is seriously higher taxes. We pay on average, including federal, state, and local taxes, about 10 percentage points less of GDP than is paid in Europe. And I'm talking about countries that are doing just fine in terms of income, social programs, and general satisfaction of life, like the Nordic countries.
In fact, our taxes are the lowest part of our GNP in probably almost the whole period going back through the 20th century. Quick point. Could this recession parallel the FDR short-lived but very virulent recession of 1937 when the Fed cut back and the Dixiecrats and the Republicans insisted on deficit reduction? Could that happen?
Well, one advantage we have now is a somewhat wiser Fed. It may sound odd coming from me. The Fed in 37 raised interest rates.
Right.
They tightened policy.
Morris Eccles.
This Fed is not. So that's the good news. Odds are the recession won't be nearly as bad as it was then.
Right.
But we can't afford this. You know, we're going to get a political backlash that's going to bring somebody, heaven forbid, like Mitt Romney into office, or even worse. And, you know, somebody like Paul Ryan, who's a complete ideological man, you know, really.
Well, we nicely
the idea
say.
That he is an educated in history or.
Yeah.
Economics or anything of the sort is ridiculous.
Well, on our side of the family, we call it lunatic fringe, flat earth, flat taxers. But
yeah, it is something like that.
We'll see tonight in regards to this. Quickly, before we end, a quick question. Have the 150 million people in the 47% become the scapegoats for the right? And will this campaign clear the air quickly? Got a point on that?
There is a war on the part of against the poor and the middle on the part of Republicans.
I got it.
And they labeled the lower half that way.
I got to go. Thank you, Jeff Madrick, for joining me on The Advocates and speaking to this critical issue of the great economic divide in America and how we should address the ongoing debate regarding our government's social and economic responsibilities. If you want to hear this broadcast, they're all archived on The Advocates. WVOX.com. Next week, I'll continue on the same theme with New York Times and Pulitzer Prize winning journalist Hedrick Smith. We'll be talking about his new book, Who Stole the American Dream? Thank you again, Jeff Madrick.
About world issues. Tune in again next.